Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
On today's episode...
Lawrence Fox called me the P word, I called him a racist, and we sued each other for that. So I won everything on my side. He defamed me when he used that word against me. He appealed, he lost, he's lost at every stage, and he had to pay me £60,000. Unfortunately, he's still suing me for calling him a racist.
Did you ever think, 6 years from now, I'll still be in court talking about this? Or did you just think nothing of it?
No.
You're just like, I'll just pop a thing on,
no,
that's fine.
No, of course not. Yeah, I mean, just assumed I would say that on Twitter, and then that would be it.
Yeah.
This is Outcast World.
Outcast World, it's Graham Smith. Today's episode comes with a bit of context. Crystal joins us at a time when drag, politics and public life have been for a while, actually, it's not just started, have been for a while colliding in ways that feel bigger than one performer. And over the last few years, Crystal, who was on Drag Race, by the way, very good at what she does, real name Colin, over the last few years, she's been at the centre of a very public legal dispute with a friend of the show, Lawrence Fox, a case that's already gone to court once and it's heading back again this summer. It's very complex. It's, it's making me sweat, the idea of talking about it, but it's worth doing. We're not here to relitigate the details, as you'll notice, because that would be risky. What we're interested in is what it does to a person when drag becomes political, when visibility becomes risky, and when staying in the spotlight starts to come with a real cost. This is a conversation about drag right now, about burnout, about backlash, about protest, about joy, and why Crystal is still choosing to stay visible and keep speaking. This is a great chat. Check it out.
Queer politics, sex, and culture. Outcast World.
Thank you for agreeing to do this today. As I was planning what we were going to do, I was kind of like, how do we do this without potentially getting sued? Because all of that is kind of... Do you know what I mean?
I am old hat at handling that side, so just leave it with me.
That has come out again, hasn't it? And we don't want to name names, but I do want to know as much as we can know, given the...
Name him,
honestly.
Yeah, I don't... No, it's fine. Is that where you want to kick off?
No, I thought we'd kick off somewhere else, but I'm just trailing that as something that we're probably going to talk about in a minute.
Yeah, sure.
It feels like drag...
We can talk about most of it.
Cool.
We can talk about most of it, to be honest. Yeah.
It feels like drag is everywhere and under attack at the same time. Some people are thriving, others are kind of exhausted, some people are stepping away. So what do you think is happening to it, and why now?
Ooh, it's a big and kind of depressing question, but I think basically my feelings about it is that it's pretty much been saturated. The market's been saturated, and the shiny new toy that heterosexuals found, which was drag, they've gotten a bit bored with and they're moving on. So it was cool. You know, the drag had this crazy bubble that no one, I don't think, ever thought was possible. And that was really fun to ride. But it does feel like that bubble is kind of bursting right now.
Do you think it kind of coincides with kind of a lot of, we were talking about on one of these episodes previously, how DEI's been rolled back in lots of places, and there was lots of attention to all of us across the LGBTQ plus community, and now that that's gone, it seems like drag in particular is being not just ignored, but attacked, isn't it?
And I'd almost call that a separate issue, because that's definitely the like reactionary right that's happening. And you know, when you see protests outside of libraries and, you know, all the hate I get on the internet, that's nothing to do with straight people not wanting to book a drag queen anymore. That's to do with, a far right agenda to demonize queer people and trans people and gender non-conforming people and kind of make them a scapegoat. But I kind of see that as like a secondary problem, because I think those people are actually so fringe, and I don't think that they're actually the real problem. I think the problem is that like there was a good 5 years where companies were like, let's get a drag queen in to host a thing at our company, and straight girls were like, let's get a drag queen for my wedding, let's all go to a drag brunch, let's all do this, and I think everyone's just gotten sick of it, basically.
So when people say they're quiet quitting drag, because this is what you said, isn't it? I mean, what are they talking about? Is that about burnout? Is it about a saturation in the market? Or disillusionment? What is it?
Well, I can only speak for myself, but I think I've kind of falling out of love with it a bit. I think it's tricky when you've had like a really high high, like I have. I basically went as far with drag as a person can go. Yeah. I mean, bar like a really few exceptions. So when you get that real peak, it's like, how do you maintain that? Do you want to keep fighting to maintain that? And, is that possible? And then if you can't, then it's like everything you do in that career starts to feel a bit like diminishing returns. Every time you do something, there's a few less eyeballs on you. So I think that was part of it. And then, you know, I was doing a lot of kind of corporate stuff and a lot of like drag brunches. And I just felt like I was performing for straight people all the time. Mm-hmm. And straight people are fine. I don't have any problem against straight people. What they do in their bedrooms is their business. But, you know, I got into drag because I liked being in gay clubs and being around gay people and queer people and like entertaining them. And I felt like I was constantly kind of choosing between my artistic voice and getting a booking, or like making, you know, a booker happy, or making sure that I didn't offend the table of Huns. So you do that long enough and you're like, well, why am I actually doing this anymore? Because I got into this because it was exciting, dangerous, cool, scary, challenging, and none of those things are true for me anymore. So is that still really where I want to be putting my energy?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I know what you mean about corporates kind of like booking, here's a drag queen, and it's like, are you engaging with the things you need to be engaging with, or is this just entertaining for the girls in accounts? And I think a lot
totally.
Of that was
and
lost
there's
at
nothing
one point.
Wrong with being entertaining. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with
sure.
entertainment. Like, I think that's great, and people deserve to be entertained. But, you know, often when you're getting booked by like a big company, they're definitely not interested in the politics around drag. They're not really interested in, really interested in like knowing anything about the queer experience. And so you do start, there is a risk of becoming a bit of a party clown in that scenario where you're just there to like, be a clown for everyone. And actually, I don't think that's what drag should be, or it's definitely not what I want drag to be for me. So, but you know, I appreciate the bookings too. It's always
thanks for the money. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I get you. What do you want to do now? I get what you're saying. You want to be able to be more overtly political without people going, "Oh, sorry, you can only exist in this box, the funny box." You've got more to say, and I feel so strongly about that. What are you planning to do now? What would you like to do now?
So I'm just trying to follow my bliss at the moment. I'm trying to follow the things that are making me really creatively inspired. So I've been DJing for about 10 years, but I finally started making my own music. So I'm like producing house and techno tracks, which is really fun. I don't know where that's going to go, but for the meantime, I'm really enjoying it. And I've started a podcast with a friend where we're just shoot the shit about gay things. We can maybe talk about that a bit more. And I've been doing political commentary stuff too. So I'm kind of a semi-regular correspondent on Sky News, and I get pitched out a lot for queer issues to go into the media to talk about queer issues. So and I can do all of those things without getting into drag.
Exactly. Drag has been dragged into a culture war whether or not it wanted to be. Did you feel like conscripted into being a political symbol, or were you fine with that bit?
Yeah, I was fine with it. I was raised by a couple of hippies who, you know, took me to protests when I was a little baby. So it's kind of been part of me for as long as I can remember. And when I got on Drag Race, I kind of really recognized the responsibility to kind of use that platform wisely. So I've always been like conscious of that. And I, you know, I like getting into a debate with some odious right-wing person. Like, I find it satisfying to like make sure that our point of views are being represented. So yeah, bring them on, I say.
Do you think that the drag scene kind of underestimated how hard a backlash would be at some point? Because sometimes it does feel like a backlash, doesn't it? I don't even know what from.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think drag is such a small part of that whole backlash puzzle. But yeah, there's definitely been a reactionary right that are responding to the entire, as you said earlier, the DEI thing, you know, whether that's race or gender or people being gender nonconforming or queer issues, you know, it's all part of the same thing. And gosh, what's that saying that, if you've never known what it's like to, I'm not going to do it right, but if you've never known what it's like to be oppressed, then equality feels like oppression to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're seeing, basically. It's clear as day.
So for you, Drag Race and drag in general, did it save drag or do you think it flattened drag?
Drag didn't need saving, so it definitely didn't save it. It catapulted it, and that came with a lot of good and a lot of less good. It gave a lot of people work. You know, even if you weren't on Drag Race, the appetite for drag was such that you could make a living as, like, you know, a local girl, quote unquote, that you never really could have before. And, you know, I have a lot of friends who were coming up at the same time as me who didn't get on Drag Race, but then, you know, they got really good work as a result of it. And they went on tour with pop stars or they've had like really regular, well-paid gigs. And that was all because of the appetite for drag. So it was really cool in that way. But I think whenever something becomes mainstream, you're going to lose a bit of the thing that made it special and dangerous and exciting in the first place. And that's kind of the sad part to see, I guess.
Is there a difference now, though, between kind of like drag on telly? Do you know what I mean? Like, we'll almost call it corporate drag. I'm sure then companies that are calling you in and going, can you do this for us? Is there a difference between that and, let's call it, club drag?
Definitely. I mean, the drag I still see in East London, if you go to The Divine, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night, it's still weird, gross, messy, exciting, really highly sexualized, stupid, you know, all of that stuff. And obviously you can't put a lot of that kind of thing on TV. And the DIY spirit of East London is like still alive and strong. And, you know, you can still go out any night of the weekend and see someone wearing a dress made out of bin bags and putting on an amazing show. And like, I don't think that kind of club spirit is ever going to go away. And yeah, long may it continue. It's so fun.
You had a run-in with someone who's very famous who made, how would I don't want to say what they said, but let's talk about, I'm going to talk around the word. I think to deploy that word against someone who is queer is an appalling thing to do. It's like, it's not just a humiliating thing and an isolating thing. It's actually fundamentally undermines your safety. What was said about you by a person in the public eye. And I want to ask you first, did you receive the money?
So, no.
Right.
Although he has paid it. It's with my lawyers.
Okay.
And I haven't had it because we are still waiting on one half of the trial to resolve itself. So I don't know how much detail to get into, but Lawrence Fox called me the P word. I called him a r**t, and we sued each other for that. So I won everything on my side. He defamed me when he used that word against me. He appealed, he lost, and he had to pay me £60,000. Unfortunately, he's still suing me for calling him a because he still claims that I destroyed his career when I called him a So that's ongoing, and his appeal on that was actually upheld. So we're going back to court this summer to decide once and for all whether or not Lawrence Fox is.
So this has been going on since, and I'm saying nothing. This has been going on since
smart.
Since 2020, I'm just like, I'm saying fuck all on this occasion. 2020, it's been going on since.
Yeah, it's nearly 6 years. It's crazy.
How's that felt? I mean, is there a stage when it's one of them things when it's that big and it's that never ending that it's the first thing you think about when you wake up in the morning? You go, fucking hell, that's still going on.
Thankfully, no. I would say it's very much in the back of my mind.
Right.
Because it comes in like peaks. And so there'll be 6 months where nothing happens. You don't hear anything. You can almost forget he exists. And then a lawyer will send a letter, or you'll get a date for trial, or et cetera, et cetera. Or you'll get your judgment. And then it comes up again. And, you know, the first time we got our victory, when we got our victory in court, I did burst into tears because I realized, oh, I've been holding this. It is insane that it's been going on for nearly 6 years, and who knows how many more years it's going to be, because we're basically back at square one with half of it. So I think the really frustrating thing about that is now knowing that, like, would I do it again?
Would you?
I think so. I'd like to think so. But how is anyone supposed to get justice when it's, you know, a 6 year process, 6 year plus process? And I find that quite disheartening.
When you engaged in this exchange, did you ever think 6 years from now I'll still be in court talking about this? Or did you just think nothing of it?
No.
You're just like, I'll just put a thing on.
No,
that's
of
fine.
Course not. Yeah, I mean, just assumed I would say that on Twitter and then that would be it.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, his retaliation that really exploded things. I mean, the word is almost lost.
Well,
crazy to me.
I think
that
it depends.
He thinks
which way these people are looking, doesn't it? There's one direction where they go, you know, and then the other direction they're like, how fucking dare you? And I don't know how we've ended up at this point. I know you're keen, as am I, to drag a lot of things into politics, and I welcome people that do that in public life, and there should be more of them. It's fair to say that we do suffer sometimes as a result of that. People go, no, it's too much. What are your thoughts on the current situation in the States? Let's talk ICE and the only show in town in terms of everyone's rights everywhere is what's happening there. What happens there determines how all kinds of things pan out for us. Like, where are you up to with it all?
Oh, it's just so grim. It's so depressing. I'm watching with the same horror that I'm sure you are. You know, we're all just seeing this and thinking, how is this real? How is this possible? At the same time, it's been incredibly heartening watching the people come together in Minneapolis specifically, and the amount of like goodwill and solidarity on the streets and people crossing, you know, partisan lines to stand together as a community. I think that's so incredible. And it makes me think that it's going to be very hard for Trump to roll something out like this out on a wider scale and a larger scale across the US, because I just don't think Americans are going to stand for it. But as you say, you know, we watch that and we see what's possible here. And I know that Reform and the Tories are both talking about bringing in an ICE style system to the UK. So it's something we need to be really, really, really concerned about. The rhetoric, the anti-immigration rhetoric, the anti-Muslim specifically rhetoric that has taken over this country, I think is so despicable. And, I'm terrified for Reform to get in.
Yeah,
you know?
Same.
And at the same time, I'm incredibly heartened by like the success that we're seeing with the Greens. And I feel really optimistic about that. And I've done a lot of work with the Greens. And my friend is running for mayor of Hackney for the Greens. Zoe, if you live in Hackney, please vote for her. I think there's a real chance that the Greens are going to do something really amazing at the next election. So,
yeah, I agree. I do have a concern.
Interesting
though.
Times.
I do have a concern, though, with that. You know what my concern is? My concern is that me personally, that I'll join this bandwagon of people on the Greens, and I agree with them ideologically on everything. But my concern is that by doing that, we're going to invite in the very thing that we're most afraid of. So right. I get that I don't want to vote for Keir Starmer. But realistically, Keir Starmer is not going to be the Prime Minister in 3 years. So if you switch that to, say, Andy Burnham was Labour leader, and I love the Greens. I love everything they're about. But you see that there's that risk, isn't there? Imagine waking up the day after the general election in 2029 and what the difference that caused it was me or you voting Green. You know, that's sure. something that I think.
But I think right now we're in a really unique and special opportunity, which is that we don't have a general election coming for a very long time.
So we can have conversations.
And so we can just be principled. Yeah, we can be principled right now, and we can try and shift the dial. And I'm not ideologically married to a specific party. I'm married to my ideologies. So, you know, if there's a candidate that's progressive, that's in my area, that has the best chance of beating Reform, I don't care who they belong to, that's who I'm going to vote for.
Yeah, same.
But I refuse to accept, you know, a Tory light from the Labour and say that's the best we deserve and that's all we are allowed to have, because, you know, right now I think we can really agitate and make some changes. The Labour Party has been the biggest disappointment I can think of in the last few years. It's so shocking. And if you get beneath the skin of what they did and what Keir Starmer did to get the power and the leadership of the Labour Party, the money he took, the lies he told, you know, it's broken politics, and I'm sick of it. And I think while we can, we should be demanding for something much, much, much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I had a conversation with my husband the other day who joined the Green Party, and I was like, sorry, this was about 2 months ago, and he'd been in A&E queuing for ages, and he got bored and joined. And I was like, well, what if we lose the next general election? And he said the same thing as you, which is that this is a unique opportunity to like shift the Overton window to the left, isn't it? Have them conversations, because they won't have them. And just hope that, I personally just hope that Labour sort everything out in time. Want to ask you about your podcast as well, because this sounds really cool.
Yeah. So it's called Camp Classics, and it's me and fellow drag artist Baby Lame. And we just talk about camp movies. We talk about gay movies and kind of try and sort out why gay people love them. So everything from Mommy Dearest to Death Becomes Her to Barbed Wire to we've just covered Notes on a Scandal, and just have a good natter about gay old movies.
I'm a big fan
What's
of Death Becomes Her.
What's your take on camp?
I think that's such a good thing to be doing a podcast about at the moment, because everybody is so depressed that we just want to retreat into kind of like camp, funny, great classic films that we loved. Death Becomes Her, is that the way where she says is that the one where she says, do you remember where we parked the car? Is that Death Becomes Her? Because we used to quote it to each other. I still don't know what that scene's
Classic.
About.
Exactly right. We need more levity. And I have a habit of getting a bit too self-serious. So forcing myself once a week to, you know, just live in a little queer bubble and just enjoy that.
How do you
really
find the process of consistently making a podcast?
Challenging,
it's draining, isn't it?
But again, yeah,
it can
it's
be
a lot
draining.
Of work. It's, I think if I had known how much work it was when I started, I'm not sure I would have done it.
But, tell me about it. It's a life sentence. You can't give up.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also really rewarding. Yeah. And, you know, building a community, you know, watching every episode get a few more listeners. It's very, very, very satisfying. And I do love doing it. So it's just one of those things, like I was saying before, like as long as I'm enjoying it, I'm going to keep pursuing it.
Yeah.
And when I stop liking it, there we go.
I think that's the definition of success, to be honest with you. It's kind of, are you doing something that you like? Are you doing something that you like and you feel like is giving back? And I would rather do that than you give me, I don't know, I might take this back. If someone gives, look, here's a job on ITV, but you can't say anything. How's that? There's so many people you can see are just in straight jackets in kind of entertainment. And then if you're able to do something that you truly enjoy and you're truly giving something back with, yeah, it takes a while to grow a podcast. Week after week, checking what the numbers are. But yeah, I'd rather do that than anything else personally. Thank you
Absolutely.
Very much for that today. Really appreciate the insight on everything. And I'm hoping to just see a bit more political stuff from you, because I think there's a lot more to come there, isn't there?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm definitely not going to get into politics. There's too
Don't
many skeletons in my closet.
Right. I always think that. Yeah, yeah. There's a few too many people might come out the woodwork. But I think that the real power is is being able to pull the strings outside of politics, isn't it? Surely they're the most powerful people, you know? Anyway, appreciate that, and good luck with everything, and hopefully speak again.
Yeah, it was great to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net, top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.